millions of not successes along the way. And that is kind of the problems with fast desired scaling companies. They try to scale up and then they blow up versus scaling up, but with the right foundations that make them sustainable. The only reason I'm successful is because I didn't quit.
Hey, and welcome back to the show. I am so excited today to have Anthony Taylor with me today, and he is going to jump into some awesome stuff. Anthony, tell us who you are and what do you do?
What's up, Todd? Thanks, everybody. Thanks for having me. Hi, everybody. So my name is Anthony. I run a company called SME Strategy. We facilitate strategic planning sessions, which is as exciting as it sounds. But really, when companies, executives have typically a 2 or 3 day strategic planning process, usually offsite, they fly someone from our team, either in person or we do it virtually, and help them get clear, focused, and on the same page in terms of where they want to go and what they need to do. We offer strategic planning tools to folks and really just help them drive forward their strategy and whatever they're trying to accomplish.
All right. Well, you just said it all, man. That was fantastic.
I got practice and, you know, been doing this long enough, but it's, hopefully that was clear. Yeah.
That was very clear. So let's talk about your target. I mean, you're helping business leadership teams. What size of company are we talking about? Like, who needs to be thinking about their strategy? And before you say everybody, who do you like to help with strategy?
I would never say everybody, because if it's everybody, okay, it's nobody. Good. But I will say, you know, our origin story was really helping, you know, small, medium enterprises. Back in the day, I was like writing business plans for people, writing marketing plans for people. Right. That's how it started. And then, you know, our kind of ideal is anywhere between kind of 20 to, you know, 500 million in revenue. But we still work with Fortune 500, you know, billion-dollar companies, right, organizations on what they do.
Awesome. So when you're talking growth strategy, though, in a large organization versus growth strategy within a $50 million company, talk to us about the similarities. Talk to us about the differences. Like, what kind of problems are you actually helping them solve?
I think it's a matter of scale. And if you're a $20 million company, how you scale to, let's say, $50 million you have to get so into the trenches. There's so many different things you have to make work. So whereas in like a $500 million company, it's obviously critical, but you're kind of making broader strokes to make the same thing happen. And then how do you get everybody engaged is the harder challenge when you're a 2,000 employee versus a 50 employee kind of company.
Yeah, 50 to 2,000, I'd say there's even like levels in there, right? Like 50 is a big change from 20. But after 50, where do you think that next threshold is? And what specific types of change are you seeing that they need to make in there?
I would say as a heuristic, so you can either look at revenue depending on the company or people. So, you know, 20 to 50, 50 to 100, 100 to 200, 200, 500, 500 to 1,000 generally are the step changes. If you are looking from small to medium to large, let's say, you're putting in layers of leadership, you're putting in support systems, you're putting structure. Once you're kind of getting to that 50 to 100, you've got really good product market fit, you're getting to scale. And then you're really looking at like market dominance. Once you're getting into the like hundreds of millions, it kind of goes back to market positioning, sales, and that kind of stuff.
Okay. That's interesting. So what you're seeing is, you know, obviously in that lower to smaller mid-sized company, their primary problems are what? Mostly people? Mostly like that structuring stuff, would you say? Or what do you see is typical there versus I like how you kind of drove into the bigger companies, it's more sales process, kind of streamlining some of those things. What are you looking at?
And I'll caveat with this is like my personal experience. This doesn't make it the end all be all.
I get it.
But I think in those smaller organizations, the bigger challenges are the CEO empowering their leadership team, you know, building a leadership team from 5 to 6 to 10 or whatever. And then like supporting empowerment across the organization. Whereas, you know, as you get bigger than that, it's each the functional departments having their own areas of expertise and really like deepening what they do.
Right. I like that. So you're going from generalists being run by an owner operator to more of a, hey, we've got this division that does this thing really well, and we need you to like make them better. Is that fair?
And, you know, that is a good way to think about it, because as these groupings of things, whether it's a business line, whether it's a HR team, marketing team, or whatever, you know, they do start getting deeper. The issue sometimes happens is the deeper they get, sometimes they get more siloed. So you have to get deep while still maintaining the breadth of collaboration across the organization.
I love it. Now, this is a great conversation because, you know, a lot of our listener base on the show, they are that group of kind of trying to go from being a launched startup into a growth organization. And I look at that as a very different animal, as I'm sure you do too. A company that's in launch mode, launch mindset, thinks about everything a little bit differently than someone who is like, okay, we know how we make money. We know what to do next, but we're just not awesome at it yet. And so we need to get better at that scaling part of the business as opposed to figuring ourselves out. You're taking people from a scaling mindset, hopefully, into a streamlined scaling process. Is that fair to say?
Yes, but there's still quite a bit of scale involved. So it's like looking at like the growth trajectory. So, we have one company that's saying, hey, we want to go from 300 to 500 million, or another one that's saying, hey, we're going from 10 to 20 million. And these were like in the past, like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And that is scale, right? Like we're so used to, at least again, from my perspective, we're so used to hearing about these, you know, billion-dollar companies and all of these things. Sure. But when you actually consider in practice, if you're trying to double over the span of 3 years, like that's 33% growth year over year compounded. Like that's a boatload of change. And so when you have like, let's call it like new businesses wanting to grow and scale, there's so much urgency around it. Whereas I find the more established companies aren't as rushed. There's urgency, there's time sensitivity, but they're not feeling all of these external pressures. They know that like it all comes in due time. So it's interesting the maturity of leaders and organizations as they go through these stages.
I love it. And maturity is the name of the game. And so let's take a step back, because to actually effectuate these kind of changes and to implement these types of strategy, it doesn't just happen magically. Generally, there's a framework, there's a system, there's a process that you like to work people through, I'm guessing. Walk us through how you do this. Like, what does your strategy look like? Do you have a framework? How do you execute this type of, or how do you deploy this type of strategy with these companies?
Okay, so there's like so many different ways to answer that question, but let's say at the heart of it is a structured strategic planning process, which is like our jam. So it's fundamentally looking at where the company is now, getting the leadership team to agree on where you're at, where you want to go, what's going to get in the way, and then basically breaking that down into what are our top priorities, breaking that down into goals and actions. And then the critical kind of other process of that is, how do we keep the trains on the track? Like, how do we make sure that week by week, month by month, quarter by quarter, we're staying on top of this thing instead of assuming it's like a, hey, set it and forget it. And just because we did the strategy session and we have a strategic plan, that it'll be fine. Like, the real work starts after the planning happens.
Agreed. And so how often do you suggest someone reevaluates how it's going? Is this a weekly thing, a monthly, quarterly? Like, what are you looking at?
Yes. So like, I think it really is the balance between the big picture, call it 30,000 feet, and on the ground execution. Yeah. As a rule of thumb, we say monthly for project calls in terms of like, what is the actions and milestones and stuff that we're working on, but fundamentally quarterly on performance. But you could also be working at a thing for 6 weeks to, you know, 2 months and say, hey, this is just not working out. Like, we're not going to get to where we want to go. And so we need to kind of go back to the drawing board. We had a group, if I have time to share this, you know, they did their strategy session. They said, hey, you know, for us to be able to grow this one business line by 130 million, assuming we're going to get this successful, they kind of crunched the numbers and they say, basically at our current trajectory, we're going to get half that. And so, you know, that's a big gap when you're talking, and that's just the gap to make the next one. So then it's saying, okay, we have to look at where we want to go as a function of the gap, not a function of the target.
Right. I agree. So looking at that and understanding that, like, I want to ask one more question before I dive into your business analysis, but As you're working with these companies and they start to, like, you're working with a leadership team and you're evaluating where they're at and discovering where they want to get to, how often are they actually aligned on where they want to get to versus the CEO wants to go here and the growth guy is here and the sales guy is here and everyone's in a different, like, are they aligned? And if so, how often does that happen? And if not, how hard is it to get them on track?
Oh, well, I'll say it's always shades of gray. You know, people hire SME strategy because they assume they're not aligned, or they assert they're not aligned. So we're not usually walking into teams who are 100% on the same page. Otherwise, we're just too damn expensive. But usually, if they are feeling like they are misaligned, they are actually more aligned than they think. But
interesting.
The only way they get to confirming that they're aligned is by going through the process of aligning. So it's, we talk about implied to explicit. And so it doesn't matter if you are aligned or not. It's if you think you're aligned and if you confirm that you're aligned. Does that make sense?
I love it. That totally makes sense to me. And I think that for those of you listening out there, this is a key differentiator. A lot of people think they are aligned until they actually whiteboard and say, what's your vision of where we're going versus where do you think we're going when you think you're going? And oftentimes that's where the true colors shine. And even when you've got explicit goals that you've set, there's still some level of believability and assuredness that the rest of the team has about those specific goals. So walk us through how you've been able to implement this or execute this in your own organization, because you are a business director, you are a business leader within your own company. How do you implement what you teach to other companies within your organization? And looking back on how you've come to where you are now, what were some of the best decisions you made in trying to get yourself to eat your own dog food?
Okay. Before I answer that, I will just kind of take a step back, because you asked the difference between, you know, the groups that are aligned and aren't aligned.
Yeah.
And we talked about the folks that feel like they're not aligned and they are, but there's also the flip side of the coin of groups that think they're aligned and they're actually not. And the same process, like, supports that. And they're like, oh, we really weren't aiming at the same thing. And so it's those false assumptions that really throw it off. But in terms of, like, you know, what we've done, we do our own strategic planning process. We have our quarterly strategy reviews. We have our monthly calls. Like, we do the work. Today we said no to a really big opportunity because it didn't align with our company values. So we really, like, walk the walk, talk the talk.
Good.
In terms of growth, we've quadrupled over the past 4 years. So we're still a small company, but it is those stages of growth. Yes, it has been slower than we wanted, but also objectively on paper, those are good numbers for a service-based business. You know, doing that has been hard, but over the entire process, like, focused on not necessarily enterprise value, but doing the stuff that would increase the valuableness of what we do, better processes, better systems, better structure.
Right.
And the goal for us is to have a calm and boring business.
I love it. That's a great way to look at things. I love it. So as you look back on your internal growth and your company's ability to execute on what you teach, has that strengthened your resolve in how you execute with other people, or has it kind of said, you know, this is a really hard part. Maybe we need to simplify this a little better. How has that kind of evolved as you've tried to implement within your own organization?
I mean, I would say I would have more patience internally for things, especially as like even in 2024, as things aren't working like we want, we say, hey, it's all against your expectations. So let's say you walk into a thing and say, well, this should take 6 months. Well, in reality, the thing might take 2 years. And so like, it's all just a guesswork. And so it takes the time it takes to get done, despite the fact that we want things to go faster. In terms of outcomes for clients, I don't know exactly how our growth, you know, supports them other than like, we're kind of doing the same thing. But it's just experience. You know, I'm 13 years into facilitating these leadership, you know, offsites. I've done hundreds of them. So I see a lot of characters. I see a lot of similarities. I see a lot of differences. And that, of course, helps me understand. But the best teacher for SME strategy has been SME strategy.
I love it. I love it. Honestly, for those listening and for those that do a lot of internal work within your own company, I want you to recognize something that Anthony just made really clear is that oftentimes, you know, trying to effectually get your own company to follow a trajectory that you think you should be on, it is that execution, that regular revisiting of the goals, of the objectives, of the mission of your company that really make the traction actually happen. And when you don't hit it and you're not hitting as fast as you want to, and you're not hitting the benchmarks you thought you could hit, I love that you are constantly iterating based off of what you're actually hitting. And how did you describe it? A nice, boring, growing company is kind of your goal. I love that mindset. How did you get to that point? Because a lot of people that listen to this show are wanting growth to happen as they hear it through the mind of Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg. How do people get satisfied with steady growth as opposed to some rapid jet propulsion? We just landed a deal with NASA and now we're a multi-billion dollar company.
Hey, no shame in the fast growing game. If that is at certain businesses, you need to do that, right? So different strokes for different folks. You know, there are some people that grow and scale very, very fast, very successfully. That's what they want to do. For us, we didn't. Our goal isn't to be a $200 million company. Our goal isn't to launch the fastest software ever. I anticipate our company is going to be around for 40 years. So I'm approaching it with like a 40-year plan mindset, not a four-year plan. But I will say, if you look at my goals and visions and all that shit from years ago, it says, you know, I want to be a $20 million company in 5 years and I want to blah, blah, blah. But the reality of it is, you know, that takes something. It's the skew of what you see. If all you see is the NVIDIAs, the Facebooks, the Teslas who have grown like that, you don't see the hundreds of thousands of businesses that have failed. And so you don't actually have a really good reference point to what it takes. If you grow your business to $1 million, that's incredibly successful. What I tell my clients is, if you're trying to grow from 30 million to 50 million, it's not reasonable to expect that it's guaranteed. It's a hard freaking thing that most people don't do.
Yeah.
So don't just assume that because you said it as a vision, it's going to happen. There are millions of not successes along the way. And that is kind of the problems with fast desired scaling companies. They try to scale up and then they blow up versus scaling up, but with the right foundations that make them sustainable.
I love it. Now, you've mentioned a few times about your ability to fail. and not necessarily hit the objectives you thought you could hit that you thought initially were attainable. How do you look back at your own growth attempts and see those shortcomings and feel good about that being a learning experience as opposed to, I'm just going to give up? Like, what is it about those losses or those shortcomings that you felt like, you know, what did you mentally do? What did you physically do to kind of just move over it and turn it into your next quarter or next yearly objective?
I mean, what other choice do I have? The only reason I'm successful is because I didn't quit. Like that's the difference, right? Hey, it's like the people who've done it just didn't quit, because quitting is the only thing that will guarantee that you fail. Now, I have the luxury of basically being able to make enough money faster than my mistakes. And ultimately that's all growing a business is. But yeah, I mean, it's iterative. I fail every day. But it's a function of how many times I try to succeed. So what doesn't show up in this podcast is the, you know, 15 years of other businesses that I started, the 16 hour days, the all of that stuff. The like friends making fun of me for going to like business meetings and having coffees with people, like that shit doesn't show up on the stat sheet. I think,
fair enough.
Who was it? You wasn't with me shooting in the gym. And so, you know, people don't see the practice. People don't see the failure. They only see the successes, which skews your understanding of what it takes.
I love it. You know, speaking of which, you know, you have the luxury of working with other businesses on a regular basis. You're seeing their failures. You're seeing their successes. It's got to help you kind of stay motivated within your own organization, I would think. Knowing that you're not the only person failing at hitting objectives that you think you could be able to hit and don't, how does that change your perspective on your business versus those who are very isolated in their own chamber and feeling like, I must really suck because I rarely hit my objectives. I'm rarely surpassing the goals I set. What do you tell people like that who are very isolated in their chamber versus someone with the luxury that you have of hearing people and their successes and failures on a regular basis?
Well, let's call it a choice, right? Because, you know, listening to a podcast is a way to get out of that echo chamber. But, you know, like what is really a failure? Like, is it a failure of self, or is it a failure of action? Or is it a failure of planning? Or is it a failure of experience? Like the first time you expected to do something, did you expect to get it perfect? If you expected it to take 10 years to get right and it took you 10 years, well, was it really a failure? Maybe you planned too long and that was the failure. You wanted it to be perfect instead of risking halfway between. So, I think that by opening your eyes to others is a good teacher, but as they say, comparison is the thief of joy. So don't compare yourself to other businesses or entrepreneurs or whatever. It's just say, hey, what can I learn? What can I adapt? What can I steal that helps me along my journey? And that's probably why your listeners are listening to this podcast.
Love it. Fantastic segue. And I want this to help other people in a way that, you know, your experience, Anthony, can effectively touch the lives of our peers who are trying to build and grow their businesses. You know, when you say to make a choice to engage with other companies, that can take a lot of different shapes and sizes. You know, for some people like you, it's listening to your clients and engaging with your clients and really hearing out their problems. For other people who are more of like a vendor type relationship, that may seem a little awkward. Is there an easy way that you've seen other people kind of embrace that mentality of, I want to learn from my peers. I want to help people? Like, what's a good way for them to get out of their own silo and just kind of get engaged in some way, shape, or form?
Only based on how you describe it, my first answer is just get over yourself. Because if you're thinking that it's awkward and you're thinking that it's weird, then you're probably not thinking with the right heart. You're thinking about your ego. You're thinking about what you look like. You think about like what you occur, like occur as. In my experience, successful people want to be around other successful people. They're not cheap about their knowledge. They're not cheap about learning. They're not cheap about, you know, looking bad and admitting that they actually don't know something. It's where you assume you know everything and, you know, that you cheap out on yourself. And ultimately, you're being cheap on your people. So whether you're a vendor, whether you're an employee, whether if you think you're too smart to learn something, you've kind of already lost the game. So, you know, be a little bit humble about where you're at.
I love it. You know, I love where this conversation's gone, because I feel like what you and I have just talked about and expressed are not only things that you and I have both had to work through in our own companies, but I have a feeling there's a lot of people listening who just haven't ever taken the time to step out of their own bubble, reach out to someone like you who actually has a strategy to help them stop thinking of this all on their own and really bring in someone who can help guide them on their strategy so that they can actually execute better having a strategy as opposed to just executing off the fly. I love what you're doing, and I love how you're helping people. And by the way, we've got links in the show notes below on how you can engage with SME and how you can kind of learn from what you're up to. Where else are you active, and where can people kind of learn about you and how you help and all that kind of stuff? Where are you most active?
Yeah, well, I'll say, you know, in my first book about entrepreneurship, I wrote, said, the only thing more expensive than an expensive lawyer or accountant is a cheap one. And so like really like willing to invest in yourself, invest in like what you're doing. Like we're not cheap as a company to work with. And I'm okay with that because we provide a lot of value. So you might think, oh, I have a coach. My coach is expensive. Not, I don't pay them because they're expensive. I pay because I get value out of it. So like, are you investing in yourself? Where people can find me, Anthony C. Taylor on the internet, YouTube. We're going to be doing more live streams at the end of 2024. And then you have anything around strategic planning or leadership, you just type it into Google, put SME strategy at the end, and there's likely going to be something there for you.
Fantastic. I love it. Anthony, thank you for your time today. I think this has been a really, really great conversation. I hope that it's helped somebody out there. If it has, let us both know. Engage with us on the comments below. We'd love to see any kind of questions, things you wish I would have asked. Anthony, I know for a fact, would love to engage with you in any way, shape, or form. So do leave some comments below. Feel free to reach out on LinkedIn or wherever we're both at. And again, Anthony, thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure. If you didn't get something out of today, I would be curious with yourself about why. But Todd, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much. And I hope it added value to your listeners today.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you all for being here. Anthony, thanks again.